He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the 73rd hole, your newest golf podcast. I am Colby Powell, joined by Taylor Williams. We are excited to get going. Taylor, Honda Classic this week. I'm fired up. We're getting going at just the right time, right as golf season is about to just catch on fire.
Hey, hey, hey. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the more exciting times of the year for sure. You know, we're kind of, you know, with all the other sports going on, football and basketball and everything creeping in, you know, the kind of start of the year can get lost a lot of times in the golf season. But with Augusta coming up, moving the Players' Championship up to early March, PGA Championship now in May, you kind of get everything, you know, is a lot more condensed than it used to be. Then even after that, you got the U.S. Open. We're going to be leading into the Olympics this year. First one since the one in 2016, which was a huge hit across the globe.
Who won the 2016? Was it Rose? Rose took down Stenson.
I believe it went Rose, Stenson, Kuchar.
Kuchar, that's right, yeah.
Because I remember this day, Kuchar, in his interview, he said it was the first time he finished third and didn't win a tournament, but he felt like he won because he got the medal.
Okay.
You know, yeah, so it's that's cool. It's kind of a little bit different feel, you know, because you finish in that top three. You know, normally you're upset because you didn't win, but in especially the first instance of the Olympics, just getting one of those medals to take home that a golfer hasn't had in over 100 years is something to be proud of, and not many people will have to their name.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, like I said, I'm Colby Powell. That is Taylor Williams. We are broadcasting live in Oklahoma City. That's where we live. That's where we'll be coming to you from, but we're talking about everything in the golfing world. A little bit about ourselves. Me, I actually grew up, baseball was my first love. Switched over to golf in high school. I grew up a Tiger fanatic, and I grew up playing with Taylor. We played high school golf together, and whenever I started playing high school golf, I was about, oh, I don't know, what would you say, Taylor? Probably a 25 handicap.
And it might be generous.
And then I played with Taylor every day for about 2-3 years, and all of a sudden I was a single digit handicap. So golf's been a lot of fun. I still play. I try to play twice a week if I can. And I actually got into local sports talk radio, and golf's my favorite sport. It's my favorite sport to watch. It's my favorite sport to talk about. And I was in local sports talk radio for about 5 years. We don't get to talk a lot of golf in local sports talk radio. You talk about the local college football team and the local NBA team, and that's just kind of where you go with everything. So I'm looking forward to doing a golf podcast where we're talking about nothing but the WGCs and the Players and the Honda this week. So I'm really looking forward to it. Taylor, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely, and I'm just excited, if not more excited than Colby, to get this golf podcast started. As an avid golfer,
we've been talking about doing this for a cool minute,
and we've finally been able to get all of our schedules to work out to where we can make this possible. And the main reason I was interested to get this started is growing up my whole life, I feel like golf knowledge is a lot of times misconstrued, and it can be hard to get the proper information you need. It seems like, you know, a lot of times people either beat around the bush and you're not getting exactly the in-depth information that you need, or you have to scour around to multiple places to get all the information you need, you know, not only for either PGA Tour tournaments, but all the other golf that's going on around the world. And, you know, we hope to bring not only insight about what's going on, but, you know, we can also educate you on your game as well, and even potentially get some cash in your pocket for some of the betting places.
Yes, sir.
DraftKings, you know, just your regular betting at your sports books. We'll even give you a few picks for your one-and-done pools coming up, depending on who you've used so far at the start of this year. So a lot of great insight coming from us.
Yeah, absolutely. And Taylor's being modest, so he did not mention that he's a two-time 5A state champion in the state of Oklahoma, individual state champion, and a former collegiate player. So out of the two of us, Taylor is definitely the one playing the serious golf. So,
yes, yeah, I won 2 state titles, played a little bit in college as well, tried to divvy on the mini tour stuff for a little bit. Anyone that's tried to do that knows the grind and the struggle it can be, and it takes a lot. And we'll even break into the down the Monday qualifier that was down at the Honda this week, and you may even bring a little bit more to light to people that aren't as aware of just how tough and how good of quality players that aren't able to get in some of these fields.
Yeah, it's crazy the level of golf that you truly have to play to get into a PGA event. But anyway, let's talk a little bit. You know, we're coming off the WGC last week. Patrick Reed gets the win, and it was polarizing. It was very polarizing. I, for one, I think Patrick Reed is great for the game of golf. I think he plays the villain role very well. You know, he hasn't come out and apologized for the Bahamas. He doesn't seem like he has any interest in being liked, in being anybody's friend. He is just unapologetically Patrick Reed. And I think it gives the viewers, I think it gives golf fans someone to kind of root against. And I think it's a good thing to have somebody on the leaderboard you're rooting for and somebody on the leaderboard you're rooting against. And he's playing great golf right now. I think it's good for the game.
Yes, I agree in a sense that, like you said, you know, where it is good for the sport from a viewer's perspective, definitely to have a hero villain type of role. You know, a lot of times throughout history, it's been based off, you know, nationality. So, you know, if an American's going against Englishmen, a lot of times you root for the country that you're affiliated with. And even Patrick Reed, who is an American, who is he was even known as Captain America at one point.
Can you believe how
well he did in the other events, but you break down, look down the numbers, without some of Spieth's good play, he might not have had as good of results as he did. Because going into last year's President's Cup, he was 0-7 anytime he did not play with Spieth on his team.
Yeah, I mean, he gave Rory the finger wag, and all of a sudden he's Captain America. And transition to however many years later, that feels like it was a million years ago. But now it's like nobody can stand the guy.
No, he is hated universally. And it's great that you mentioned that Ryder Cup, you know, because it was kind of a dark time in American golf. You know, we had
it really was.
We couldn't win across the pond. We just coming off of the
still can't win across the
still
pond.
Can't win across the pond.
That damn pond, man! I swear, it's like
we need a
it's
bridge.
Like a force field.
We need a bridge across the pond.
We need a bridge. We need to drive
a
to
way
Europe
to get there. I mean, it's been horrible when we get over there. And back then, that was 2016 when the Reed McIlroy match happened, which is one of the more infamous matches that we'll remember probably for the rest of golf history. And unfortunately, the last time that we had the Ryder Cup on our soil was 2012, and unfortunately we had the 10-6 lead, and then on Sunday we did not have the lead. So
that was that the one where Rory overslept?
Rory, he overslept. I'm putting up quotations now. Overslept. I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist, and I believe that the Europeans, they knew that they needed a spark of massive proportions. And anyone who's looked up Rory's schedule, you know, he's not the type to get to his tee time 2 hours before. He's not going to be grinding away, you know. So if there was any player who they wanted to try to make a spark like that, it would have been Rory, you know, to show up 5 minutes before, hit a few putts. And I believe, I may be wrong on this, but he played Keegan Bradley in that match. And he either shot 65 or 66 on his own ball without hitting any range balls.
That's not bad.
And so Europe or U.S. had the 10-6 lead. Going back to it, we lost the lead. So at the time, it was a dark place in American golf. And so for 2016, for the U.S. to get that Ryder Cup win, you know, was huge and monumental. And that's kind of what propelled Reed to that Captain America kind of status, beating Rory in that excellent match. And unfortunately, with his numerous cheating allegations, we can go back to the stories alleged from even likes of Kevin Kisner, some of his Georgia teammates, and some of his Augusta State teammates as well, accusing him of...
Peter Costas just last week on the No Laying Up podcast said four times he was following Patrick Reed, and he saw him stick five or six clubs behind his ball to clear out a little better lie.
Clear out the lie, and... I remember just last week, I believe Brooks Koepka was on some sort of talk show. I can't remember it right now. And they actually asked him, do you think Patrick Reed cheated? And he said he wasn't sugarcoating. He said yes. He said, well, was he building sandcastles? And, I mean, it's just clear as day. And he even alliterated to, he had seen players do this before where, you know, anytime you're playing a tournament with rough, heavy rough, you know, you want to try to have the best lie you can. If that ball is sitting down, it's going to be hard to get down to it with anything more than a wedge. So he was mentioning he would see players, you know, try to pull out a 3-wood from a horrible lie, and they're just sitting there, bump, 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 behind the ball, trying to get that grass pointed down where they need it to. And
don't do that. Don't be that guy.
He had iterated to it was kind of younger in his career. He didn't feel like he was established. He had said that if he was at that point now, he would say something about it. And it just kind of shows that, you know, golf, kind of unlike some of the other sports, you know, it's just such an integrity game. And while Reed is good for the game as far as, you know, a villain role and someone that everyone can hate and root against, which draws interest, cheating has no place in the game. I don't think that anyone else that would condone cheating or any of that type, you know, just blatantly cheating. You know, obviously a ball is going to move, or, you know, you're going to miss a rule every once in a while. You know, that happens.
JT had to get the ruling on Sunday. JT, in front of the bunker, it was which was a goofy ruling, by the way.
It only took about 35, 40 minutes.
God, so. They were two holes behind. The rules. When the rules official has to call a rules official, something went wrong.
Yeah, it's. I think that's more of a... And that also can go down to the complexity of the rules of the game, you know, where... You know, a lot of people will see a normal rule book and it's, you know, just a, you know, half an inch thick or whatever. Well, that's just a summarized version.
A summarized version that's written in 4-point font. And
yes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And if you want an actual rule book, it's going to look like a novel. And unfortunately, you know, that's kind of what we saw a couple years ago when they tried to clarify some of the rules a little bit better, kind of make it better for the game. This can be a whole nother topic down the line. They did some definitely things right with, you know, just trying to speed up the pace of play with, as long as, you know, keeping the flag in, stuff like that, which are stuff that I agree with. One of the things I majorly disagreed with was the switch to the 3-minute rule instead of 5 minutes. Especially, it's a little bit easier on tour because, you know, there's spotters everywhere. And if you're just playing in another tournament that's having to play with these rules and you hit it over on the right and there's no one up there and some really gnarly rough and you only have 3 minutes to look for your ball, good luck to you.
Yeah, that's not very long. So Patrick Reed wins last week. We're transitioning into the Honda Classic. This week, Patrick Reed is not in the field, but in the field, trying to go back-to-back on the PGA Tour, Victor Hovland, go Pokes, pistols firing. Victor Hovland with the big win last week in Puerto Rico, walk-off 30-footer. Were you watching it live?
I was not watching it live at the time. I was actually watching the other event at the time.
Yeah, they were on at the same time.
They were on the same time. Puerto Rico started a little bit earlier. I was following it on my phone, and whenever I looked at it, after 10 holes, and Hovland had a 3-shot lead. And
so you didn't see the triple he made on 11.
Well, what had happened was during this time, this is when the coverage had switched from Golf Channel to NBC.
Yeah, so coverage gap.
So there was a coverage gap. So there was a right in the coverage gap was when Hovland was playing hole 11, and I saw him chunk a chip.
So you saw the one by the cart path.
I saw the one by the cart
path. That he advanced a solid 8-10 feet.
It was, it was off of, you know, it's just that wet, tight grass. I mean, it's just, you know, it's such a hard shot.
You know what I didn't understand?
What's that?
3-shot lead on the 11th hole, back nine. It was a wet lie. It was kind of nasty. He was short-sighted. Why not take an 8-iron, bump it into the hill, let it run out to 15 feet, and at very worst, you make a 5?
You know, in hindsight, that's definitely, I think, what Hovland would do. And he even said it reiterated after he made that putt. They asked him about it. He just said, straight up, I suck at chipping. And, you know, that's going to make a real likable guy. We talk about someone that's going to be good for the game, I think. Hovland, with his personality, you know, last year was stay off the weed,
yeah.
You know, and just, you know, Twitterless Vic. You know, there's that meme going around of all the bobbleheads and him shaking his head. He just seems like a really cool guy. And I think he's definitely going to be the yin to Patrick Reed's yang as far as hero villain role.
Yeah, I like Victor Hovland. Obviously, I graduated from Oklahoma State with, you know, that's where I was at for 4 years. So I enjoy watching Victor Hovland play golf. All right, the Honda Classic this week. Ricky, speaking of Oklahoma State, back in action. Ricky has been Ricky appearances have been few and far between so far this season. He hadn't teed up since Phoenix. Is that right?
Phoenix was his last tournament, and, you know, Ricky, he probably hasn't had the start to the year that he would like. Phoenix, he traditionally plays well. He finished 37th, I believe, at that event.
Yeah, I think he did, because I think – no, I didn't have him in the one and done that week. Maybe I had $20 on him that week or something. I can't remember, but he did not play.
You had some betting implications on him, and it did not work out in your favor, is what you're saying.
That's usually how my betting implications work out.
Especially when you bet on Ricky.
It is hard to hit winners in golf. I mean, it is really hard to hit winners in golf.
Well, especially anymore, you know, whenever you're getting these, you know, the deeper fields that you'll see, even the regular tournaments, you know, you can see guys that just barely get in last spot are able to go in and contend on the weekend. And even the smaller events, you condense all the great players, you know, like you saw last week. And, you know, it can just turn into a birdie fest, essentially, no matter what course you're playing.
Yeah. Do you see who the odds-on favorite is to win at Honda this week?
I believe it is my long-haired Golden Locks boy, Tommy Fleetwood.
Fairway Jesus. Tommy Fleetwood is the odds-on favorite. And has never won a PGA Tour event. How is Tommy Fleetwood favored over Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, Gary Woodland, Justin Rose? Tommy Fleetwood should not be favored over those guys. He just shouldn't. He's never won a Tour event.
He's never won a Tour event, and it's funny you mention Koepka in there because, you know, if this was a major, I think we'd be throwing all of our money on Koepka. Unfortunately, Koepka, he did finish tied second in this tournament last year with Ricky, so he does have a little bit of success here at this event. Unfortunately, Koepka, you know, over his track record, has performed a lot well in the bigger tournaments as opposed to some of the smaller tournaments. It's almost as if he kind of just has that don't give a damn mentality with a lot of these events. And so it's all about his motivation factor at this point.
Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood played here once. He played here in 2018. He finished fourth. So, I mean, as far as track record goes, very small sample size, but he did play this course well the one time that he played here in 2018. So, I don't know. I'm looking at my one and done here. I'm trying to figure out. I used Tommy Fleetwood last week. I've already used Ricky. I don't think I really want to use a big name for the Honda. I think I want to, you know, try to find some value, dig deep here. Maybe even like an Erik van Rooyen coming off a good performance last week. I feel like that's kind of the range I'm looking at. I ain't trying to run out a big name this week at the Honda.
No, it would be tough to run out a big name. And you'll see with the course set up, PGA National is normally one of the tougher tests that the players see on a yearly basis. It requires extensively great ball striking. It's very demanding off the tee and on the approach shots especially. So you're going to look at ball strikers who you want to or people that are at least swinging well. Watching Erik van Rooyen swing last week, it's hard to find any flaw in that action. If anyone had seen the Twitter video that ran around of his on the swing drill, if anyone knows, do you know what I'm talking about, Colby? Have you ever seen that?
I don't think I have.
Okay, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, go check out Twitter, punch in Erik van Rooyen, you'll find it. So he gets to the top of his swing, and essentially he starts his downswing, and he shifts his back leg essentially 90 degrees back to the right behind him.
What?
It is, I have been following golf my whole life. I actually Debbie in swing instruction as well, and I have no idea what in the world he was trying to do. So if anyone knows, but whatever he did, it worked, got him a third place finish last week. Swing looks immaculate. I mean, his driver swing is so fluid, plane is perfect, spine angle stays strong. It's gonna be hard to see him not swinging well unless he just has, you know, anytime you're traveling to a different, you know, it's not essentially super far away, but anytime you're traveling from another country to another for an event in a 3-day stretch, you never kind of know what will happen in that aspect.
Yeah, I should actually refer to him as close personal friend Erik van Rooyen, because I did follow him for a couple holes last summer at Pebble. I went out to the U.S. Open. My wife and I went out to Pebble, and I followed Erik van Rooyen for a couple holes. So that's a close personal friend, Erik van Rooyen. My wife liked him because he was wearing a sweater and had a big wolf on the front. It was like dope-ass wolf on the front of his sweater. So my wife was also an Erik van Rooyen fan. And then last week, they were showing him holing out one of the 18 times he holed out last week at Mexico. And I asked my wife, I said, you remember this guy? He's the guy from Pebble with the wolf on his sweater. She had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, no. So she didn't like him that much then.
The only thing she could focus on at Pebble was, when are we going to sit down and stop walking? Because for anyone who's never been to Pebble, first off, you need to go. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Second off, it is a freaking haul. I mean, it is a hard walk. It takes forever to get all the way out to number 10 green, which is down the coast. And it's so much up and down. I mean, you see like the cliff on 6. It is... I mean, that's the real deal, the cliff on 6. And it was funny, the juxtaposition between the young guys and the old guys getting up the cliff. So Hovland and Tiger, I think, were either in the same group or maybe one group apart on Sunday whenever we were there. So watch them come through on like 3, and then we jumped up to 6. And Hovland comes through, and Hovland like runs up the hill so that he can get up it fast. Mm-hmm. And then Tiger comes through with his fuse back, and Tiger is like, very slowly, gingerly walks. It takes him like 2 minutes to get up the hill. I'm like, that's the difference in being 22 and being 40. What is Tiger? 44? 45? Yeah, 44. So, yeah, there's a big difference between the young guys and the old guys. DraftKings this week. You got any DraftKings value you're liking? I haven't set my lineup yet. Every week I get in the pool with about 15 buddies. Last week I got second. I had Rory and JT, and they're both choking chokers. I was in first all week. And then guy with Bryson leapfrogged me on Sunday because Rory and JT are choking chokers. So who you like this week in DraftKings?
Absolutely, yeah. You definitely picked the chokers there. And Rory has been having some Sunday woes here, so hopefully he can turn that around. But onto this week's DraftKings. I do have a little bit of value that I do like this week. Most expensive on DraftKings this week is Fleetwood. He is 11,600.
Pass.
Kobe's won the pass.
11-6?
11-6. This is why I'm liking Fleetwood. So you go back and you look at his events this year. He's played three events. Abu Dhabi finished tied second. Omega Dubai, he finished T11. And WGC Mexico, last week his worst finish was a T18. Not too bad. DraftKings,
it is a backdoor T18.
I don't care.
T18's T18, backdoor or not.
It's cash and check, baby. So, you know, Fleetwood's, I look at someone, you know, if you're wanting a guaranteed someone that's going to get you four rounds in an event, which whenever you're trying to spend the top dog money, you know, you want someone who is going to put those four rounds and have a chance to be there on Sunday. And I do see Fleetwood, as my companion here does not like Fleetwood as much, I do see Fleetwood having a good week.
Maybe I'm just low on Fleetwood because I keep wondering, when's it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Is he going to win? Or is he just going to be the guy who wins once a year in Europe, comes over, plays 8-10 tour events, is competitive in two or three of them, and never wins? It just, I feel like it's the same thing over and over again with Tommy Fleetwood. And he's a consistent player. He's a good ball striker. I actually really like his swing. I don't know. If I'm dropping 11-6 on DraftKings, that's like last week I had Rory and JT. I thought they both had a great chance to win the tournament. And they did. They couldn't get it done on Sunday.
Right there.
But they both had a great chance to win the tournament. I can't justify doling out 11-6 on a guy who I think, yeah, he can give me a backdoor T8. I need a guy who's going to win for 11-6.
And, you know, I just look at some of the other players around him at value. Next on his list, Kepka, who is 11-200. And, you know, kind of like I reiterated earlier, you know, you just kind of never know what you're going to get from Kepka on an event that's not a major. Last year he did finish tied second, so he does have great experience here, you know, over that, you know, from what he did last year. And I just don't know what to expect from him, you know, not only from that, you know, he had his knee surgery over the summer, and you know, I do think that, especially for, you know, if you're doing a one and done pool, definitely do not run out Kepka in this week. You want to save him for the bigger tournaments. Especially.
If you're not using Kepka at a major, or the Tour Championship, because the Tour Championship now has the goofy format where whoever's leading FedEx Cup points starts at 10 under, but Kepka still might not even accrue that many. He's not going to be higher than JT or Rory at the end of the year. If you're not using Kepka at a major, you're a bum.
Yeah, and you're just doing a very dumb decision. And I mean, so he finished. I need to get it. Like, so I know he finished second last year at the Masters. He won the PGA
easily.
I mean, he had to falter down the stretch to even make it a tournament.
Right.
And then he finished second at Pebble. Correct.
It was Woodland. Rose was right there at Pebble. Yeah, right. Kepka was near the top. Yeah.
I know he had a chance on 18. I think he had to eagle on 18 to make something happen. Yeah. I think that might have been before Woodland's putt that he made as well. And let me see.
Saucy little chip Woodland hit on 17.
And he finished T4th at the British Open. So, you know, the worst place he had in the majors was a fourth, which in your one and done pool, a T4 is probably going to make you just around 700K. Per se, so you know that would be more than a solo second at this event, or at least close to it.
Yeah, so saving for the majors.
Absolutely, and you know when we're talking about value here, there's only you know 400 point difference between Fleetwood and Kepka, and that's the reason I would lean towards Fleetwood on that aspect, because I do believe you can get a little bit down. I do have a little bit of value I see in some of the lower guys this week that might be able to get you four rounds of play. So even if you want to run with Fleetwood and even another top guy, you might be able to build your lineup around some of the lower value that we'll get into here in a little
bit. Who's around 7K on DraftKings, 7,500? Because if you're gonna run out of Fleetwood or a Kepka, you gotta have a couple guys down at 7K make the cut.
You gotta have some low balls, and I'll kind of get into some guys I like just a little bit higher than that, so you can kind of build around them as well. Two guys I really like. I like both guys who are in the 7,800 range. That is Lee Westwood and Harry English.
Westwood's playing well.
Harry English is playing well. Both of them at 7,800. You could probably throw both of them in your lineup and expect good results. Westwood won across the pond. A few weeks ago, I believe it was Abu Dhabi that he won.
Yeah, it was. It was the HSBC Dubai. No, it wasn't the Dubai Desert Classic. No, it was Abu Dhabi.
It was Abu Dhabi yesterday. Yeah. Won two strokes over your boy Tommy Fleetwood.
Tommy Fleetwood, right. Looky there, Tommy Fleetwood not winning a golf tournament.
Not winning
a golf tournament. Playing well, but not winning a golf tournament. Who would have guessed?
And speaking of Tommy Fleetwood not winning a tournament, I had him last year in the one and done at the British Open, where it was him and Shane Lowry down the stretch. And of course, he couldn't make anything happen. Lowry played fabulous.
Lowry played great. Lowry was great down the stretch. I want to remind everyone, I'm Colby Powell. That is Taylor Williams. This is the 73rd hole. Glad everyone is with us for our debut episode. Head over to Twitter and find us. You can find me on Twitter at Colby J. Powell. You can find Taylor on Twitter at T_Williams101. At Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101. So head over to Twitter, check us out, get in touch with us there. Also, a guy playing some pretty good golf. Guy we played against in high school. Well, you played against. I was on the course. Taylor Gooch playing some pretty good golf and is in the field this week.
Taylor Gooch, a local legend around these parts, and I probably played 30-plus rounds with this guy. It's hard to find a better guy than Taylor. Just extremely hard work ethic, and everything's paying off for him now. I couldn't be happier for the guy. And at 7,200 value on DraftKings, I think it's hard to find anyone better than that.
That's pretty good value that low, because at that point, you're looking for a cut maker. You're looking on DraftKings, if you're spending 7,200, you're looking for a guy who can hopefully get you like a T45. And he's playing well enough. I think I'd feel pretty confident he can get in that range.
And you look at Taylor's events that he's played this year, has yet to miss a cut. Going in reverse order here. So last tournament, the Genesis finished T10, which Riviera, as we know, is one of the, similar to this week at PGA Nationals, one of the more demanding ball strikers courts. It's really hard to dink it around there and post a score. You got to hit the shots and make things happen. So for him to finish 10th at that, and also that stellar field and invitational field that the Genesis was, to beat some of those players the way he did, is just tremendous. Has yet to miss a cut this year in five events. Actually has not missed a cut in a official World Golf Ranking event since the Greenbrier, at which was the first event of the 2019-2020 season. So our man Taylor has been on a roll. 7,200 value. He finished top 20 last year? I think he finished 20th at this event last year. And
He finished in 20th.
So he has good record here. Has been hitting it well. You look at his numbers. He's his strokes gained off the tee. Strokes gained. His iron play has just been tremendous. I'm really looking for Taylor to play well this week, and especially if you want to build around a little bit of lower value on your DraftKings lineup. Definitely want to run Taylor out there.
Yeah, and another thing I like too. He's played five times in the calendar year 2020, but he was off last week. So he's been playing a lot of golf and should be on form, but he shouldn't be burnt out because he just had a week off. So I like that too. I don't like to get a guy who's going to be burnt out and miss the cut like that. What about defending champion Keith Mitchell? Won here last year. It was you talked about, some long shots have a history of winning at the Honda. He won last year. His last two tournaments, 32nd at Pebble, 16th at Waste Management, but he missed the cut at the Farmers and at the Sony. Missed a cut back in November. So Keith Mitchell, defending champ, do anything at all for you?
I do think Mitchell will play well here. I don't expect him to win again or even potentially be in the top 10 or the running for the title. I do think Mitchell is one of those guys. I believe he's 7,300 on DraftKings. Could be another guy that you could pair, with a Gooch or some of these other guys that we have mentioned. Even have a few more to go off here later on. So if you are wanting to run, some of those big dogs out there, you're wanting to, not even the Fleetwoods that we talked about. Some of the other big names that I like. We iterated Hovland earlier, 9,500. Be really hard to win back-to-back weeks. So if you're looking to throw a little bit of cash on to win, I might stay away from that aspect.
Stay off the weed.
And but for 9,500 value for Hovland, with some of the lesser value that I see in this tournament, you can build around him. His ball striking numbers have been fabulous. He's one of the best drivers on the tour. His chipping is horrible, as he'll tell you himself. So as long as he can hit the greens and not flub chips,
get down on that Bermuda, that club's gonna stick.
Chipping
on that Bermuda, that club's gonna stick in the ground. Especially loving those chips.
If he's into the grain, it's gonna be tough. Kind of like we were talking about before. If he might want to work on some of those little bump and run shots. I think we all can remember, especially huge Tiger fans like we are, a few years ago when Tiger was 40 yards away and punching five irons up there. So I don't know if Hovland needs to go to that extent. Get the ground, get the ball on the ground, let it run. Might avoid some of those flubs like he had last week, especially on those end of the grain shots are going to be really tough this week.
Yeah. So one thing that I really love about this tournament is the bear trap. I love the bear trap. 15, 16, 17. These are really hard holes. Water everywhere. Par three, two par threes, and a par four is number 16. The bear trap is a great three-hole stretch. So here's what we need to do. We need to rank each of us our top five three-hole stretches on the PGA Tour. Let's start at number five, if you will. Or should we just do a top five for the show? Yeah, because there's not that many.
There's not a whole abundance of them. Not none that are well known enough to make this list.
So let's come up with a consensus top five. So at number five, where do we want to go? We want to go to Colonial. We want to go to the Snake Pit, Quail Hollow, maybe.
These are all good ones, for sure. The green, I'm a particular fan of the Green Mile. I love 17 and 18 at Quail Hollow. They are two of the best holes I believe in the world. A lot of us can remember back when Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship there. His iron shot he hit into 17, which essentially sealed the tournament. One of the best shots you'll see any player hit of all time. And that definitely sticks out there as well. As far as, you know, obviously the best ones go, we can even, you know, obviously I think Augusta, Amen Corner, there's no doubt about that. That'll be number one up there as well. And then, so you're looking even at some other ones as well. The Gauntlet at Sawgrass, 16, 17, 18 is real famous. The Island Green, everyone knows that. Just some of the, and you notice the common trend on a lot of these holes, it's extremely penalizing if you don't hit a good shot. And there's a lot of H2O around.
Yeah, it's exciting. It makes it exciting to watch. It makes it exciting for the spectators, the fans watching on TV. So at number five, why don't we just start from the top so that we know what we have out of the way? We put Amen Corner at one?
How can you not?
How can you not?
You can't. So Amen Corner goes from, for anyone who's unaware, it goes from the second shot on 11 to...
Coming down the hill.
Yep. To after your tee shot on 13.
Yeah, kind of the corner there. And you can even get, like, the feature group coverage on Masters.com. Whenever it fires up, you'll have Amen Corner coverage.
Yes.
And then you'll have 15 and 16 coverage as well. I can't wait for the Masters.
We have a countdown every year.
I feel like we're just killing time until the Masters gets here.
Well, and it's a little bit unique this year as well. You know, we waited essentially 11 years for our man Tiger to rebound from, you know, not only some personal issues he had, but health issues as well. Just one of the most remarkable comebacks in sports, not alone golf. And so to have him as the defending champion, it'll be interesting to see how he does. You know, is he going to come out ready to run, you know, wanting to defend his title bad, or is he going to be kind of like he was after he won the Masters last year, you know, a little lackadaisical, you know, just more excited that he got the job done finally, as opposed to grinding and wanting to, you know, get it done.
All right, so Amen Corner at one. Number two, I'm partial to the Gauntlet at Sawgrass. Big tournament. Water everywhere.
Don't call it the fifth major, though.
Don't call it the fifth major. It's not the fifth major. It's just another
tour event.
There are no fifth
major. There are four majors.
Hardest field in golf. I'm fine with that. You can call it whatever you want to as far as that's concerned.
They did raise
the purse. Not a fifth major.
They did raise the purse this year. Winner will get $2.7 million cash.
The winner will get $2.7
million? Winner is $2.7 million cash. So if
that's a lot.
If you're a tour player and you want to play well one week, I would suggest that one.
Do you like the Gauntlet at two, or are you partial to something else?
I like the infamous Cliffs of Doom at Pebble 8 through 10. Mm-hmm. I think the scenery makes
my close personal friend Pebble Beach Golf Links.
Close personal friend Pebble Beach. You're actually going to build a house there, aren't you?
Soon, yeah. Just trying to work out some details with the property. You know, there's attorneys involved. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, I think you're going to buy Nance's place, aren't you, with the 7 replica in the backyard?
Yeah, he's being kind of greedy on his asking price. I probably won't end up getting it just because, you know, difference of opinion in where we should be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he doesn't want more than $100K for it. So I think Colby thinks he can get it for that on real estate property.
Yeah, the Monterey Peninsula, the entire Monterey Peninsula driving up to Pebble, it's pretty breathtaking.
It's hard to find a more scenic place in the world than that. So it's going to be hard for me to say.
Hard to find a wealthier place than that, too. There's like a little creek, and there's just cash rolling down the creek.
Just money floating everywhere, baby. Right. So I'm going with Cliff of Dooms at two, Colby. If you want to throw the Gauntlet in there at three, you can. But I would definitely.
All right, let's go Cliffs of Doom two, Gauntlet three.
All right, so we got those two. Now,
so we've got, so we've still got on the table the Snake Pit, the Horrible Horseshoe at Colonial, and the Bear Trap. All on the table still.
We haven't used the Green Mile yet either.
We haven't used the Green Mile.
I want to use the Green Mile. I believe it's going to be hard to beat. It's hard to beat that one.
Okay, so let's put the Green Mile at four then. Because I like the Green Mile too. So now two of these three have to be left out. Bear Trap, Snake Pit, Horrible Horseshoe at Colonial.
And, you know, the difference between these three that we're listing, Snake Pit and Bear Trap, are 16 through 18 and 15 through 17 holes, respectively. The Horrible Horseshoe is more towards the front of the course, holes three through five. Holes three through five, which makes it a little more unique than some of these other ones.
So let's kick it out.
Well, we're gonna kick that one out. Even though I love those holes, they're exquisite holes. Colonial is one of the best golf courses you'll find. I love those old-timey courses where, you know, you're rewarded for your good shots and penalized for your bad ones. Is the way that course is made, and you see that a lot of players love that course. It gets a great field every year, but because of the stretch of holes where it's located in the round,
also it's not as big of an event.
It is.
It's the smallest event of the three.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
so that leaves us with the Bear Trap and Snake Pit. One has to stay. One has to go.
I'm probably going with this week the Bear Trap.
I was in total agreement. I like the Bear Trap.
I think the Bear Trap. Snake Pit is. I really like 16. At Innisbrook, I do. 17 and 18 are good holes as well, but they're not as polarizing as a hole like 16. And holes 15 through 17 this week at PGA National, 15 and 17 are demanding par threes with water on the right side and front, and 16 is also a challenging par four with water on it as well. Just three extensively really great golf holes. And it's not included in the Bear Trap, but to have number 18, PGA National reachable par five in there as well, kind of adds on to it as well, because you go through those three holes and then you're ending on a, while it's a very risk-reward hole in a sense, but you're able to make an eagle if you need to, like we saw Tiger and Rory do a couple years ago.
Also, it's Jack's place. And the Bear Trap, I mean, that's just a phenomenal nickname for a stretch of holes.
Yeah, we're going off nostalgia at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we got Amen Corner at one. We got the Cliffs of Doom at Pebble at two. The Gauntlet at Sawgrass at three. The Green Mile at Quail Hollow at four. And then the Bear Trap at five. Solid top five.
It's hard to find better stretch of holes than that. So each stretch is three holes, and we named five. So that would be 15 holes right there. So try playing those 15 holes in a row and see how well your score is.
Hard pass.
It would be, you'd be there for a while, and might make you want to quit the game.
Yeah, like hard pass on that. All right, we are going to give some picks before we get out of here. But first thing I want to do, every week, we're going to be partnered with FromTheBackTees.com here on the 73rd hole. Great people, great content. Make sure you head over to FromTheBackTees.com and check it all out. I've actually been writing for them for a couple of months. Every week, I write one story. It can be about anything. It can be about something on the tour. It can be anywhere else. So this week, I threw up the Guide to Golf Gambling. This is, you know, everybody goes out on the course. You like to play money games. So I kind of put some of my favorites in here. So we've got Wolf. Wolf, obviously. You can play with four or five, but playing with four is kind of lame. I've never played with four. Have you ever played with four?
I have. It's definitely not as fun, for sure. And five is the way to play the game.
Yeah. So Wolf is an absolute blast. I included in my story our fun game of Wolf. We played in Duncan one time, Taylor and I. There were five of us playing Wolf. And the fun thing about Wolf is it's not handicapped, but the better player doesn't really have an advantage. Everybody tees off. Whoever tees off first is the Wolf, and they have to choose a tee shot to be their teammate for that hole, and then it's a best ball going in. And we played in Duncan one time, and Taylor made 17 pars and a birdie and lost, what, like $30?
Yes, and that was
playing like $1 Wolf.
Yeah, and it's not like we're playing $20 hole or anything like this either. You know, it's not like you just skated by. I mean, that was about the most amount of money you could have lost that day, and I played bogey free as well.
Yeah, I think I shot maybe like 84 that day and won like $16 or something. And Taylor had 17 pars to birdie and lost $30.
Yeah, so you can definitely be rewarded for not being the best player. If you are going to play five, and for example, if there's one player who's a scratch and you have four other guys who's a 20 handicap, you may not see the exact same results because everyone's just going to pick the really good player every time.
Yeah.
But if you can get, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of difference in here between, you know, a low single-digit handicap and a mid-tier guy. There's not...
If you can get five players within, like, 10 handicap of each other, you're going to have a good Wolf game.
It's going to be fun. And then, you know, you do, you know, the last three holes, whoever's down the most can bet how much ever... You can play different ways.
Depends how you're. There's a million different ways to play Wolf.
Yes, so you can, and that's essentially going to break down to, you know, how much do you want to play for? You know, how much cash do you want to throw out there as a potential win? I've heard of Wolf games people losing close to $1,000 and
on 18?
On 18, and that's not and, you know, these aren't, that's not even millionaires playing either or anything like that. So yeah. it can get egregious at times, but
yeah, I'm out on that.
It's a lot of fun, especially if you're on the other side of that.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Nassau, I love a good Nassau. You play Nassau with two or four players. It's just, you have a front nine bet, a back nine bet, and a total bet. So you're playing with four. It's two-man best ball teams. Or you can just play one-on-one against somebody else. I like Nassau because it's simple. Let's play on the front nine. Whoever wins gets 10 bucks. Back nine, whoever wins the back nine gets 10 bucks. Whoever wins the total gets 10 bucks. Usually, somebody's going to win the front, somebody's going to win the back, and you're only going to end up exchanging $10 at the end of the day anyway. So I like Nassau. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's not, like you're saying, it's real simple. You know, you're not having to break down all these different rules to go by. One of the great things about it, too, is, you know, if you're playing against someone who has a really good front nine and you kind of slum back and you're six or seven strokes back and you probably don't have a chance to win the overall, you at least have a chance to get a little bit of your money back on the back nine because you only have to win by a stroke to at least get a 2-to-1 disadvantage.
Yeah, so it keeps you engaged at the turn even if you got blown out on the front. 9 point, which is a good game for three players. There aren't a lot of good games for three players. Most things are 2, 4, or 5 for Wolf, but 9 points, three players. It's if everyone ties the hole, there's 9 points out on every hole. Everybody ties the hole, you all get three. You win the hole and like two other people tie, you get five, they each get two. So you're just divvying up the 9 points the whole way. If you and another guy tie to win the hole and somebody else finishes third, like the scores are 4, 4, 5, the two guys who made par, made four, get 4 points, the other guy gets one, and then if everybody makes different scores, then the winner gets five, and then three, and then one. So basically just avoid getting 1 point.
Yeah, it's a nice way to play. It is from my experience by far the best three player game that you'll find. It's a nice way to play too, you know, if you're not you know, wanting to just go off your score, you know, you want to kind of mix it up a little bit. It's not, and it's rewarding too, you know, because, you know, like you said, if you're playing three players and two guys have a par, 4 points, you know, all of a sudden you have, you know, a 4-foot par putt. If you make it, you're going to get, you know, it's going to be 3-3-3, but if you miss it, it's 4-4-1 in your disadvantage. So there's, can be a lot of pressure on the player, you know, to either tie the score or even to win the hole.
Yeah, 9 points, a lot of fun. I've got a couple more on that. Head over to FromTheBackTees.com and check that out. You can also follow them on Twitter at FromTheBackTees, and we're thrilled to be partnering with them here on the 73rd hole. All right, it is just about time to wrap this thing up, but we need to give picks for the Honda Classic. Give me, Taylor, your winner, and give me a dark horse. I would say for dark horse, we need to go probably 30-to-1 or longer odds for a dark horse.
I definitely have that for you guys.
All right, so give me a winner and a dark horse.
All right, for a winner here, okay. So I'm just going to list off a few of the guys here. I'll kind of break down which one I like the most as well. I iterated to Hovland and Fleetwood, who I like as well. Some of the other big names I like up there. I like Sungjae Im to play well. Kind of like Fleetwood that we mentioned, you know, when is he going to get through? When's he going to make the jump to that win? He just plays good golf every week, and I think that his good ball striking will prevail here too. My one-and-done pick personally is Billy Horschel. I do think he will be one of the more popular picks. The main reason is because...
Quit stealing my picks! It's the first episode, you're stealing my picks!
And the thing about the one and done, too, you know, once you get later on in the year, players dwindle down a lot. While you're still a little bit early in the season, a lot of players have not been used yet, so there'll be a more influx of the same player picked. I expect Horschel to be a well-picked name here. So those are some of the names that I like. I've already talked about fading Koepka. Another name I would like to fade for his value is Justin Rose. He has not been playing particularly great golf this year. And for his DraftKings value at $9,900, I do feel like there's some other guys that you can get for a lot better value. As far as a dark horse, I will go way down on the dark horse list here. I got a guy who is 6,600 on DraftKings, and I do think if you want to throw him in your lineup, I do think he will get you four rounds. Name is Tyler McCumber. He has made. I don't want to get.
When I said dark horse, I did not think you were going Tyler McCumber.
And I'll throw another names out there. I just want to make sure I get this one out here for everyone because this is a really good DraftKings pick that I like. As far as this year, missed the cut at the Sony, but since then has not missed a cut. Has finished no worse than 32nd his last three events. I expect him to have a have a promising week this week, you know, especially for the value on DraftKings. As far as some of the other names that I would throw out there, we've already mentioned Taylor Gooch, 7,200. We mentioned Westwood and English, 7,800. A couple guys in between there. I really like Wyndham Clark, 7,600. Played well here last week, finished 7th. Last year at this event, finished 7th. I expect him to do well. Another young guy, Maverick McNeely, has been playing really well, 7,500 value on DraftKings. I expect him to get you 4 rounds. And even a couple former big names in golf who have been struggling with their games lately, I think have a potential to get you 4 rounds this week. 6,400, Jason Duffner, has a really good track record at this tournament. Last few events, hasn't finished better than like 60th, but has made the cut each time. So he is getting you 4 rounds in there. And another really cheap guy, you know, if you're especially wanting to build around these top-heavy lineup, 6,200, looking at Luke Donald. Made the cut at Pebble Beach a few weeks ago, finished in the top 35, I believe. Another guy who has a really good track record here at this event. His ball striking has been pretty bad over the last few years, but with his record here, he could probably has a little bit of confidence, and his superior short game might be able to get him 4 rounds as well. So I want to go ahead and narrow it down to the ones that I said particularly. I'm going with Billy Horschel for my one-and-done pick. As far as 30-1 long shot, I'm looking at maybe a Westwood, a Harry English might have a chance to win as well. Very bottom was the Tyler McCumber, like I mentioned earlier.
Okay, sounds good. I was going to take Billy Horschel. It was going to be my pick to win, but we're not going to do that. We're not going to do the same ones right off the bat. So I like Billy Horschel, strong on him. Since we both like him, that means he'll probably play terrible, miss the cut. That's what normally happens. So here's what I'm going to do. For my winner, I'm going to take, he's 28-1, so he's not 31, wouldn't qualify as a dark horse. Give me Daniel Berger as my winner. We've seen some other guys, you know, he's played pretty well this year. He's had a couple top 10 finishes, hadn't missed a cut in a while. So give me Daniel Berger playing some pretty good golf to win this week. And then for my dark horse, I'm going to go down to 66-1. I'm going to pull out a guy who's played well in Florida in the past, has won on Bermuda. Give me Brian Harman as my dark horse this week at 66-1.
Okay.
A little lefty, a little southpaw action.
I like that.
All right, that's, Honda Classic this week. Preview, what we got next week? What is next week's tournament?
Next week, I believe,
Bay Hill.
Bay Hill next week?
Yeah, because Tiger has to commit by 5 o'clock on Friday.
It's not Innisbrook, or it's not?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's Bay Hill. Probably should look this up. That's all right. Because I know we've got Bay Hill coming up. We've got the Players coming up. Players is
You're
in...
right, it is Arnold Palmer. Bay Hill, and then the Players.
Bay Hill,
after
and
that.
Then the Players. Okay, and then that's after that is probably going to be the Valspar.
Yes, then the Valspar. Then we're looking at the match play.
Yeah, the match. So do you think Tiger will go Bay Hill Players and match play? You think he'll play 3 out of 4 weeks leading into the Masters?
It was interesting to see. You know, he missed the Mexico tournament, which we talked about the Olympics, so we don't know if he's if he'll be playing. You know, with his how much is he going to be wanting to play? You know, if he's going to be. And a lot of players did skip Mexico as well. I do think he is. Obviously, I do think he will play Bay Hill to Arnold Arney, and he's it's one of the courses where he's won. Was he won 8 times there now?
I think it's 8.
8.
Could be 12. 15?
It's we lost count and started count again is the way it works. So I think we'll see. You know, I don't see any way we don't see him with the Players for that $2.7 million check. He has played Valspar in the past. I don't see that happening.
I don't think he plays Valspar.
I think the wild card here in all this is the match play. I do, because with the new format now, he will get 3 matches in. It's not like it used to be where you could show up on Wednesday and have to fly home within 3 hours because you lost 1 match.
But also with his body and the stuff, he said he was dealing with some stiffness in his back at Genesis. At the match play, you're guaranteed 3 rounds, but if you get hot, you have to play, 7
yes.
rounds?
Yes, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of golf. That's a lot of golf on an old man's back.
It is. It's a lot of golf. And, you know, and we actually kind of worried about that last year. We might be able to remember he lost to Lucas Bernegard.
Bernegard!
In the quarterfinals. It was quarterfinals.
Well, it was the quarters, yeah.
Yeah, quarters that he lost to. So, you know, and that's the thing about match play. You know, it's not necessarily the name or anything like that. It's just 18 holes anyone can win.
Who plays better that day?
Which makes that tournament one of the more exciting ones of the season. But I do see that the match play is the wild card here in Tiger's game plan. But I do expect to see him back-to-back weeks at the Bay Hill and the Players as well.
Yep, good stuff. We've got a lot of good golf coming up. Like we said, we've got the Players, Masters, PGA, all the majors, the Olympics, the Ryder Cup. It is a huge year for golf, and we are thrilled to be with you here on the 73rd hole. That is Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. This was a lot of fun. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101. Also follow our partners with From the Back Tees at From the Back Tees, and check them out at FromTheBackTees.com. If you like what you heard, subscribe and rate our podcast wherever you may be listening, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you're listening, give us a rate, give us a subscribe. We would certainly appreciate it. We're back next week. Thanks for listening to the 73rd Hole.